Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining me on another episode of Bench Talk. This is Jackie Mitchell, your career consultant. And today I am so excited to bring you a very, very special guest, someone that I've known for many, many years. And I think she is the ultimate badass. And I had to reach out to her to join me on a new podcast episode, bringing back the podcast. So let's welcome Michaela Brown. Michaela, say hello to the folks.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I am so excited. So I'm going to try my hardest to not ask questions that I already know. But ask you the questions that really will help bring out the reasons why you are such a badass woman, how you are doing the damn thing and just, you know, really excelling and succeeding and being a motivation and inspiration to so many of us. I've been watching your journey mainly on Instagram. Pictures are lovely.
Thank you.
And some of the press that you have gotten, I'm like, oh, I know her. Somebody famous, you know? So I think that's it's awesome. Really awesome. So Michaela Brown, PhD, the fashion anthropologist, fashion educator, fashion activist, fashion entrepreneur, and fashion enthusiast. Michaela, welcome again.
I would love
for you to give a little snippet of what those titles, those labels, I should say, mean to you as it pertains to you and what you do. The anthropologist,
absolutely,
activist, entrepreneur, and enthusiast.
Great. So I definitely consider myself overall and at my core an artist, and fashion is my medium. I've been in love with fashion since I was younger, mainly because I was really, really tall and couldn't find clothing that fit me really well. And I knew from maybe around the time I was 13 that fashion was a space and place of confidence for me and for many, many women. I've always wanted to work in the fashion industry, but coming from a very Caribbean background and Jamaican family, higher education was definitely a route I had to take. It was non-negotiable. And
Absolutely.
That's how I ended up. Yeah. Like, it wasn't even a discussion. Like,
it's
my
discussion, right?
Yeah. My dad was very clear. He did not migrate for me to become a starving artist. And so I'm really grateful that he pushed me in that vein, because I got a PhD in anthropology and it has really shaped how I engage with fashion today. And I know for a fact, if I had gone to fashion school, which is what I really wanted to do, my involvement in the industry, my impact on the industry, my engagement with the industry would have been very, very different. And I feel fully actualized in the company that I'm building now. So I feel very much that I'm a fashion lover. I'm a fashion artist first, but there's many different ways that I interact with fashion. And one of that is anthropologically, which ostensibly just means I'm very, very interested in the intersection between fashion and culture, the ways that, you know, we organize our families, the way that we eat, our politics, our religion, our sociology, all those things are reflected in the clothing that we wear. And so my whole company is built around this idea of having people think more critically about an industry that's kind of seen as superficial, but is also actually incredibly deep. So for me, I just want people to start thinking more critically about what their clothing is saying about who they are and what they stand for. And that's what the overarching mission is of my brand.
Awesome. That's awesome. Let's take it back a little bit. Let's take it back a little bit to you doing your PhD. Because I remember when you went away to do that and you were doing, I believe it was your dissertation.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit, because your journey, if you will, your journey has not been at least
a straight line. Not at all.
Has not been a straight line. Talk about what you've been through, what you've done.
Yeah, so I think what's really important, and I'm sure a lot of people listening are children of immigrants or immigrants themselves. And there's a lot of psychological and sociological rules that come with being an immigrant, moving to another country that is completely different from where you come from, especially when you come from a predominantly Black country and then you come to the US and it's predominantly white. And so for me, my path couldn't have been straight, because there were many things that I experienced as a child of an immigrant, as an immigrant myself, that I had to like break some of those social rules. So being an immigrant, when my parents migrated from Jamaica in the 80s, they were very much of the group of immigrants, keep your head down, don't attract attention to yourself, play by the rules, do it right, go unnoticed. And being an entrepreneur and also being a disruptor and creating new changes within an industry is the exact opposite of that. And I had to really have a come to Jesus moment with myself where it was taking me so long to get my business off the ground. And I had to realize that the reason why it took me so long is that I was unlearning a lot of the rules that had been imposed by my parents, not because they were bad parents, but because they were trying to protect me and our family union in a system that they didn't understand. And so one of those ways was going to get a graduate degree. Both my parents are educators. We come from a family of educators. I wasn't the first person in my family to get a PhD. It was something that had to be done to give them the assurance that they needed that I could take care of myself. Hmm. If I had my way, I would have been in the fashion industry 10 years ago, but I lost 10 years. I'm 40. My 20s was entirely spent getting my PhD, and I didn't write my dissertation on fashion. If anything, I wrote it on migration, because that's where I was at the time. I was an immigrant, and that was the experience that was really close to my heart and that I understood and I wanted to understand better. But I realized that the 10 years, my 30s, where I spent a majority of my time trying to build my business, it was really about me unlearning the things that made me a good immigrant, playing by the rules, not asking questions, creating new spaces for myself, speaking up, expecting to be heard and respected. Those were all things that were not naturally part of like who I was based on the way I was raised. So my path couldn't have been straight because in many ways I'm diverting from the way I was raised. But at the same time, I would say that my parents gave me such a strong foundation and confidence that if they hadn't been the parents that I had, if they hadn't raised me with such discipline, drive, ambition, courage, I mean, the things that they did, I can't even imagine moving to another country with a small child and making it work. Like, they are incredibly courageous people. So in some ways, the way that my immigrant upbringing made this path a little bit longer and harder for me, it's sustaining me now. And I daily see ways that the way that my parents raised me is making me an amazing entrepreneur. So there's a push-pull that makes that line not very straight. But I think most immigrant kids do experience this, where your parents kind of say, I don't understand what you're doing, right. But yet you have to have the courage to kind of say, I'm going to do it anyway. And it's okay. You guys will understand eventually and you'll catch up. But it is hard.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Okay. Because coming from a very similar, background, our parents know each other, you know,
yes.
as well. You know my dad, right?
Yeah.
and you know how that goes. So
yeah.
School was your job, right?
Yeah.
And you really didn't have a say in it. You didn't have
No.
You just didn't have a say.
No. Nope.
Unfortunately or fortunately, that was how we were raised. And so
yeah.
I want to go back because you talked about getting your PhD in your 20s. Talk about a little, if you don't mind, a little bit. One, what exactly do you have your PhD in? And two,
right.
How did you break the news, quote unquote, break the news to your parents that, okay, I have my PhD in this, but this is not what I want to do? You know,
right.
Like,
what
was that conversation?
So I have my doctorate in anthropology and education, which are both things, tools that I use very, very critically within my business today. And we definitely had the discussion when I graduated from undergrad, and I was 21, a fully actualized adult, but there was definitely a conversation in our household, like graduate school was compulsory.
Right.
Like, I went to an Ivy League undergrad. Most people would have been so juiced that their daughter went to Penn, like that would have been enough. And when I graduated, my parents immediately said to me, what's next?
Wow.
And it's something I ask myself every day. So I'm actually not mad at them for that because it always keeps me looking forward, but mm-hmm. they were proud. But it wasn't the end all be all, like what's next.
Right.
And so when I graduated, I actually applied to fashion schools in Milan the same time I applied to doctoral programs, one for myself and one for them. And I got into both. And my dad said to me, it's really important for me to know that you can take care of yourself if I'm no longer on the earth, get your doctorate, and then I will support you in becoming an artist. And at that time, it didn't feel like a big ask, mainly because I was really scared about becoming an artist. Like, I probably presented it very confidently, but mm-hmm. internally, kind of going back to that immigrant background, like, there wasn't a ton of us graduating from our high schools and colleges saying they wanted to be a fashion designer, work in the fashion industry.
Right.
Like, most of us were becoming lawyers or doctors or business people. And also at that time, when you think about it, that's 20 years ago. startup culture wasn't as big as it is now. So people being disruptors, people like, we were just kind of learning about people like Zuckerberg, and like we knew about Steve Jobs, but he was this illustrious white man with all this privilege doing all this amazing stuff. We're not like him. We're not going to be the next Steve Jobs.
Right.
So I think it was very easy for me to follow my father's path, because if I'm completely honest, I was petrified of becoming an artist. And so like, it was kind of like this buffer period where I could kind of like really think about it and figure it out. And so when I mapped out my life, because my parents make maps and I make maps, I imagined that I would do fashion in my 50s when my kids were grown, mm-hmm. and I would get a PhD, I'd work in the nonprofit sector, I'd help with community development projects, and then I'd do fashion later as my passion project. Because at that time, again, people weren't living their passion every day. Like now that's a dime a dozen, that wasn't happening 20 years ago. So I was really okay with the path that he slated me, because I wanted to be able to pay my bills. I didn't want to be a starving artist. And I was really afraid, because there's no roadmap to being an entrepreneur. There's no roadmap to being a disruptor. So for me, I was like, for the next 5 years, my life is mapped. I know exactly what classes to take, what papers to write, what comps to take. Yeah, give me that. I'm all about rules. Like Caribbean families exist around and operate around rules. Right. So an idea of spending 5 years with completely mapped out was really comforting to me at 21. And I'm a spiritual person, and I really believe everything happens for a reason. And I think God knew that I was meant to be a fashion anthropologist and not a fashion designer. Mm-hmm. And so it that path, as frustrating as it became for me in my 30s, because in my 20s, I didn't mind it. But in my 30s, I did mind the time I had lost. In my 20s, it felt like the right decision for me. And I don't regret it now in hindsight. So okay. For me, the direction that my father pushed me in was 100% the right step for me. I don't regret it at all. And I know for a fact that I'm better as a fashion anthropologist than I am as a fashion designer. And so it was the right choice for me. But I think the lesson in that is sometimes you have to, there's no roadmap to your life. And especially the way that we live now with so many different options, so many different stimuli, not playing by the rules can be incredibly scary, but it can be rewarding. And sometimes you don't know the end result. So at 21, I had no idea one day I'd build a business around fashion anthropology. Fashion anthropology still kind of doesn't even exist now. I kind of made it up.
Doesn't exist. So
it does in academic circles, but no one has really thought about making a business out of it. I could have never conceptualized this. And so sometimes you have to just trust the universe, trust yourself that the world is guiding you towards your highest good and your sole purpose. And even if you have no idea what that looks like, it's okay, because every step is getting you closer to that. And that's critically important. And I wish someone had told me that at 21, someone had told me that at 31, because mm-hmm. there were so many points of angst throughout my journey where I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea where I'm going. I'm completely making this up. What the hell am I doing?
Right.
It's okay. I think we all feel that at some point, but know that as long as you keep working toward a goal, even if you don't know what that goal is,
right,
you will get there. You will get there. And sometimes you don't know what you're working toward. You just have to trust that if you want it bad enough and if you're alert enough, you can get there, whatever there is. Because sometimes you don't even know until you're there, and you literally wake up one day. This happened to me where I was like, oh my God, I'm like doing this. Exactly. I didn't even know. Like exactly. I was hustling for so many years and nothing was happening. And then one day I looked up and I was like, oh my God, I'm actually doing this. Like, how did I get here? But it was 10 years in the making, and I didn't even know.
And that's the thing. And I try to tell people, you may not have it mapped out all the way,
yeah.
but just take that step and move forward. Take the next step and move forward. As yes. you're doing things, other opportunities yes. may arise, and you really yes. you have to be aware. Like you yes. can't go through this journey or your journey with Agreed. Your eyes closed. You literally have to be aware of what
aware and alert
of what's yep. around you. And
yep.
you may not think it's an opportunity, but I'm telling you, like, it's an opportunity. Whatever I'm doing air quotes, whatever the it is, it may not, let's say for argument's sake, someone has an opportunity to take a position in another country at the same yeah. job, right? But it's a lateral move. It may be an opportunity of a lifetime, because you never know what may happen while you're there. You
yeah,
know?
And I think that's really important. I think we live in like a society of like immediate gratification. And mm-hmm. I don't know about, but I think when it comes to entrepreneurism, there's a lot of paying your dues. Like there's yes. a lot of like getting down and dirty, doing stuff for free. like not being recognized. And I think what you have to appreciate is, one, that's okay, because a lot of times in the beginning you're making mistakes and no one's paying you any attention, so no one's really noticing. So cool, do it now.
Right.
B, you're kind of building confidence in yourself that, like, okay, when no one's looking, you're like building up a muscle, an intellectual muscle, a spiritual muscle, a social muscle. You're figuring things out. And I think that you can't be rewarded unless you do the work. And so even though you might not get paid from that one gig that feels like a waste of time, mm-hmm. 5 gigs from now, you're going to get paid, because that gig that you got paid nothing was on your resume, or the confidence you learned in that gig makes you more employable in the future. So you like, you have to really be willing to do things for free. You have to be willing, as we say in Jamaica, to suck salt.
Right.
Like I had a PhD. I was in my 30s. I was working like side jobs. Mm-hmm. My bosses were like 24. Like, hey, Mikhail, you did a really good job today. In my mind, I was like, I went to Columbia. Like, right. I think I can hand out water bottles, boo, but thanks. Did I hand out that water bottle good? Great.
Exactly.
Great.
Exactly.
Glad I paid $100,000 to learn how to do that.
Exactly.
But, like, at the same time, like, you pay your dues. You do what you have to do to get it done. And I think in particular, women, like, we know how to suck salt. We know how to, like, do what we need to do to feed the babies at the end of the night. And so, like, you tap into that part of yourself. And I also think it keeps you humble.
Yeah.
I just started making money. Like, I'm 40 years old, and this is like the first time I'm able to buy something without thinking, like, can I actually afford it? Mm-hmm. But I appreciate every single thing that I have, because most of my 30s, I was a starving artist. Like, I had no money. Like, would have to save to, like, buy ice cream, like an ice cream cone at the end of the week as, like, my treat. There's nothing that can happen to me moving forward that I ever take for granted. I'm perpetually in awe of the life that I have today. And I might not have been if I had, as we say in Jamaica, a bust in my 20s. Like, if I had blown up in my 20s, I might have felt really entitled to everything that I have now. And I do not. Every single thing, every day that I wake up and I don't have to report to the man, every day that I, like, decide what I want to wear, decide what I'm going to post on social media, the full autonomy of me having my own business. All of that is a privilege to me, and I hope I never, ever lose that. And I doubt I will, because I spent so long trying to get it. And right. So, like, I'm perpetually afraid I might lose it. So I'm like, let me be grateful. Let me practice gratitude so that God doesn't take this away from me, because I don't ever want to go back to how it was before. Like, I literally never want to go back there.
No, totally get it. There's something that you said I want to, I don't want to lose sight of what you said regarding doing the things that you may not necessarily think you could be doing. I just had this conversation this week with a junior project manager, and she wants to get into, I'm doing air quotes, project management. I'm like, you're in project management. You're
right.
You may not be at the level. I mean, I'm at a senior level. I'm 20 plus years in, right?
Right, so, right.
And I said to her, I took projects that were garbage projects.
Yes, that no one else wanted.
Nobody else wanted.
Yeah.
And in our circle, there's a thing called a BAU, a business as usual project. These are things where, let's say, for argument's sake, oh, we're changing everyone's email address from this to Google. Like, it's not a big deal, but you know what? It's a big deal later on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because that builds on something else, and the knowledge that you get from that and the people that you're exposed to, you know? So I'm telling folks, it's not always the thing. Look at where it puts you, because it may put you in a position where you now, can be around others of influence.
Yeah.
Right. So you really have to, like you said, you have to be aware of opportunities. You may not be exactly where you think you need to be or where you want to be, but if you reframe the thinking and just shift your focus a little bit and look outside of you, you may see, oh wow, I am partnered with this person who influence with that person who, you know what I mean? So you never know. So I say, take the opportunities as they arise. Sometimes you even have to make your own opportunities.
100%.
Do what you need to do. You may not be making the money, but it's not always about the money. You know, yes, I'm a career coach, and I help people get to the levels that they want to get to and up, up, and up. But sometimes it's not up, up, and up. Maybe it's side. We're going to take a side. We're going to take another step to the side, because it puts you in a place that can get you elevated. You may not be there tomorrow, but you will eventually get there because now you're getting the experience, you know, you're getting the exposure. And when you said, you nailed it right on the head, make those mistakes.
When no one's looking.
When no one is looking.
Yeah.
That is where
and you And I also think people skills. Notice. People do notice when you're stepping up and doing those jobs that nobody else wants.
Absolutely.
And you might, and they might not always tell you, but they're watching.
They're watching.
I was invited to teach at Cornell this year because a professor was going on sabbatical. Mm-hmm. And everything they asked me to do, I was just up there part-time teaching classes. I was living in between Manhattan and Ithaca, going back and forth every week, 8 hours a week on the bus. Everything they asked me to do, I said yes to. Because I just knew I wanted them to know that I was a team player, that I was committed to this job, that I was willing to go the extra mile. And they continued to renew my contract. If I had gone in with a very myopic mind of, I'm going to teach these classes and then it's going to be done, right. You really have to learn how to leverage. You have to be incredibly strategic. And I think when women are strategic, oftentimes we're seen as manipulative or aggressive, men are always leveraging. I very rarely say no because I know there will come a time in my life where I will only say no because it's my right. But I'm not there yet. I'm still paying my dues. So I'll do things for free. I'll say yes, even when I'm exhausted. Because I'm paying my dues and it will get me to the place where one day I can say no. And I'm okay with saying no because I know that I've spent years saying yes and now it's my time. And you'll know when that time is. But I really think it's very important for people to be willing to do the uncute jobs. And because we live such a social media life, where you always want to look great.
Oh my God, say it again. I need you to do that.
Like it's not your life, to get where you really want to get, your life is just not always going to look cute. And like, that's okay. That's okay because one day you're going to be killing the game and you'll be all levels of cuteness. But no one's going to care about what you're saying or what you're doing or even how you look if you don't have the work ethic to back it up. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, like, you're just building that muscle. You're building that muscle by doing those jobs and you're humbling yourself. And I think the more I move into higher circles, the more I realize how entitled people in those spaces are. And they're not having fun. Like, the people who expect to always be great, the people who expect people to always, like, lay down for them and do whatever they want, they're very unhappy people. They're not very kind and they're not appreciative or present in the moment. And so then paying your dues, if that means that when you finally do make it to the other side, it makes you humble and it makes you appreciate. Like, I feel everything very, very critically. Like, my stomach is always jumping up. Like, every opportunity I have, no one's more excited about the opportunity than I am. Cause I knew how hard I worked to get here. I knew that it wasn't given to me. And the one thing I also want to say, that the way success works is that nothing happens, and then it happens. And then everything starts happening really, really fast.
Really fast.
So if you're in the middle of nothing happening, you're like, yo, I need to stop. Nothing's happening. This is a waste of my time. The probability that you step off the treadmill the minute before you're actually about to make it is really, really close.
Absolutely.
So, like, I read so many professional books and they were like, probably the day you quit, the next day is the day that you were about to blow up. And so I was always chasing the day I was about to blow up. I'm still chasing the day I'm
Me
about
too.
To blow up.
I'm still chasing it.
Like, I'm not
still
there,
chasing
you know
what I'm it. Saying? That's my motivation.
Mm-hmm. I won't quit because I paid too many dues. I gave up too much of my life. I wasted so many years doing things that I didn't really want to do. I owe myself to see this to the end. And so I'm okay to do that because I got years in the game now. I got a lot of skin in this game.
Right.
And I really am worried that if I stop now, I could wake up at 60, 70, 80 and thought, God, if I had just done that another year, God knows where I'll be today. I don't ever want to feel that. I don't ever want to feel that.
Exactly. That type of guilt because you know, too quickly, you know.
Yeah.
But what do you say to the woman who just feels like she has no one motivation or support?
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely felt that way throughout. And I think that's a very honest and okay thing to feel. And if you stick with it, you will realize that if you only have yourself, that's enough. So I would say only in the last year, only in my 40th year of life or 41st year of life, have I realized that, like, there were many, many times in my 30s that I felt incredibly alone, incredibly lonely. And there's really not a worse feeling sometimes than feeling lonely.
Right.
But I don't regret it in hindsight because it built up my inner reserve. I'm not incredibly needy about a lot of things. I don't need a lot of external validation to feel feel good about what I'm doing, because for so long it was just me talking to myself, me feeling everything by myself. Because even if you have people in your life, when you're being an entrepreneur or building something new, they can never understand what you're going through, because right. no one's ever really done it. It's not a template.
Right.
But that's okay if no one else gets it, because if that means that you end up being your own best friend, if that means that, you know, if my world fell down around me tomorrow, I'd be okay, because I know how to take care of myself. I know what it's like to be on the ground with nothing, alone. And there's a certain level of comfort of knowing no matter what, I'll always have my own back and I'll always take care of myself and I'll always get myself out the other side. It gives me the courage to take the risks I take business-wise. Because I'm like, even if it flops, it's okay, Michaela. You flopped before and you got yourself up and you dusted yourself up. So I can be really courageous, because if my courage or my strength or my belief in myself came from somebody else, if that person left me, I'd be shit out of luck. But it doesn't. It comes from me. And no one can take that from me. And I think Absolutely. That's the difference from how our parents raised us. For our Absolutely. Parents, I remember my mother saying to me, you have to get a really good education, because they can take everything else from you but your education. They can make you ugly. They can make you poor. But they can never make you unsmart. I think as I've gotten older. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why education was so important to them. But I think as I got older, I think self-reliance. I think education is incredibly key. But self-reliance is something no one can ever take from you. Because when you've been down and dirty with yourself and you've seen yourself at your worst and you're ashamed at every article of like breath that you take, but you move on another day, you live another day, you figure your stuff out.
Right.
No one can ever take your self-reliance from you. There's no one who can tell me I'm not shit, that I can't get it done, because I've gotten it done and I've been great at a lot of things. So right. it doesn't really matter what anybody else thinks. It really doesn't matter to me. As long as I have my own back, that's what matters to me.
You know, it's funny because I'll get comments about different things that I'll do in my life, make really big life choices and changes. And I'll get comments that, oh, you're so brave. No, I know in my bones that I got this, right? Yep. I know that I will be okay.
Yeah.
That comes from nothing more than Keith and Sonia.
Always said,
you know, you're talking about education, they always instilled that in us, right? And so I went and I did my education, I got that, and want to go further, actually. And no one can take that from me. The experiences that I have, no one can take that from me. The bruises that I have from being beat up so badly over the years in being one of very few black women in an IT space 20 years ago. No one can take that from me. So what people see as brave, I'm seeing as this is just me. This is just life. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know? I know I will be okay because I have been through a lot. You know, so I don't think there's anything that could come my way that would make me feel less than. You know what I'm saying?
Agreed.
So some people unfortunately don't have that support system or have had those people in their lives to push them or motivate them in those types of ways. But you have to find something within yourself, you know, to just keep going. And, you know, it sounds a little corny, and tell me what you think of this, but when people say, what does it mean to you? But when people say, remember your why, for me, you know, it's a very personal thing for me, but remembering my why am I doing the things that I do? You know, what gets me out of bed every day when I want to press snooze 5 more times? What is it that gets me up? It's not money.
Yeah.
Money is not my motivation. You know, for some people it is. Money definitely is not my motivation. What gets me going? For me, it's a very personal thing, but for me, it's twofold. One of the things is being a black woman in the space that I'm in, I know that I am a role model for a lot of young women coming through. You know, I know that when I am in a conference, or a meeting or what have you with very high level executives, I'm being watched.
Yeah.
How I carry myself, how I handle myself, how I communicate and interact, I'm being watched and talked about.
Yeah.
And so
And judged.
you know, and judged. So it's like, I need to do this because we need to be in more spaces.
Yeah, agree.
That's my motivation. So when I say it's a little personal, for me, that's my motivation. It has nothing to do with money. It has everything to do with, I have a 17-year-old daughter. I want her in spaces that I was the only Black face in that space. And I don't want that for her. You know what I mean? Right. I want it to be comfortable for her to be in that space, and it's not uncomfortable for her or the other people.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
For me, that's my one of the motivations that gets me up out of the bed every morning. So for you, when you hear people say, remember your why, what does that mean to you?
Well, the first thing that came up to me is, for me at least, it's the why not. Mm. So I remember when I was getting my doctorate, it was incredibly hard, and I was not incredibly good at it at the beginning, and I had to almost train myself to be good at it. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling myself, like, I have met people with doctorates, and some of them are incredible fools. Like, they are not very smart. And if they can get a PhD, I can get a PhD.
Yeah.
Or if I go to a really, a meeting full of, like, you know, leaders of industry, if they can do it, why not me?
Why not?
And I think that's how we make progress as women and as minorities. We're kind of saying, like, why not us? Why can't we get pay equity? Why can't we be in the room when we're making final decisions?
Yeah.
And so, like, for me, it's like, why not? I know for a fact there's nothing discernibly different from me and the people who are in those rooms. So if they can get in that room, then why not me? I think it's also incredibly important to have a mission for your life. Yes. I knew from when I was in high school, I never, ever, ever wanted 2.5 kids and a dog. I've always wanted multiple houses all over the world. I wanted to be traveling. I wanted to be speaking. I live in a 400 square foot studio in New York. I do not have houses all over the world, but I won't stop until I do. I absolutely will not stop until I do. And so you have to have a mission and a business plan for your life. And you need to always be, you can't ever compromise it. And you need to always be working for it. Because I decided that I wasn't going to have a conventional life, there was never an opportunity for me to get stuck in a 9-to-5 in my 30s, where I could have made good money with my doctorate. Mm-hmm. It was just never going to be enough. I didn't want to come home at 5, depleted, unhappy, unactualized, disinterested.
Right.
I always knew I wanted a big life. And for me, I am motivated by money, not from the sense that the dollar amount matters to me, but I want to be able to do, buy, or go anywhere I want, whenever I want.
For me, the
money equates to freedom.
Absolutely.
So I don't ever want to be second guessing. Can I buy that? Can I get an appetizer and a dessert? I don't want to do all that. I want to do and get and be and go and all those things whenever I want to.
Think about it. Yeah.
And not even have to think about it. And I think, you know, living in New York, which is a very wealthy city, people here live very good lives, and I see them living very good lives. And I think, me too. Why not me? Like, I want that too. So I just have to work really hard to get it, because in some ways I don't have the leg up they have, whether they be because of their gender or, you know, the money that their parents have or who invested in them.
Right.
It might take me a little bit longer, but I'm not going to stop until I'm in that room with them. And whether that room's a fancy restaurant, an expensive luxury apartment building, I'm not stopping until I'm in that room.
You go. And you will get there.
Thank you. Thank God. I have no other choice. I have no plan B.
We'll be neighbors. We'll be neighbors.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
Because my next school is a high rise. Don't.
Right. Because they're real cute. Because they're real cute. Me too.
They're real cute. The yard, front and back. I've been there, done that. My neck. It's got to be a high rise with a doorman, and you're bringing up my
concierge. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So no, money is not a motivating force for me, but I do understand that money can bring you a lot of freedom. You know, it's a tool.
Yeah.
You know, what is your relationship with money? That's something that I talk about as well. Your relationship with money and how do you view money? Money is a tool. It really is a tool, you know?
Yeah.
So we cannot leave before you talk about this amazing project.
I love it. I love it. I do. I really love what I do.
I so love this. I want to know the details on this because TCT project. I want to know how that got started. How did you birth that? And where are you today? And where do you see yourself in the future with it?
Great. So I want to say that I've been an entrepreneur for 10 years, and this is my fourth business. And I say that because this is very typical. And most people think like everyone's just coming up with these great ideas and they're getting funding and their first idea and they're a millionaire. But there's a running joke in Silicon Valley that if you ever go to a VC to pitch, they always say to you, what number business is this for you? Right. And if it's 1 to 3, they tell you to go back and come back.
Right.
And so I had a fashion line. So I got my doctorate, like I promised my dad. I worked in the nonprofit sector. And then I started a fashion line and I ran that for about 4 years. And it was a really big hit amongst my friends and family, but y'all can't feed me. Like, y'all don't pay me enough to get that high-rise apartment.
Right.
So I had to take a step back because I wasn't making any money. And part of that is, you know, being a minority fashion designer, you don't necessarily have the exposure and connections that you need to survive in a very saturated industry.
Yeah.
So for, I would say, honestly, for about 3 years, I was kind of listless and didn't know what to do with myself. And then I was talking to a friend one day, and I was telling him I had watched a episode of Anthony Bourdain, and I was thinking, I want to do a travel show, but rather than talking about food, I want to talk about fashion. And he was like, you should do it. And of course, like, it's so obvious. Like, it was literally like a Lego falling into place, a piece of a puzzle falling into place.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, I had not thought that I could start something from scratch. In my mind, because maybe because I'm a Caribbean kid, mm-hmm. I was like, let me go into an industry that has set rules. So I read right. every book about being a fashion designer. I followed every rule to the T, and I was 100% still broke. And so for me, when he said that, I just decided I wanted to be the Anthony Bourdain of fashion. And in the same ways that he would say in Madrid, this is what they eat. This is why they eat it. This is where you should eat when you're in Madrid. I would do the same thing, but for clothing. And for other minority designers who are struggling in ways that I was really familiar with, like, it's really hard for people outside of your inner circle to know that your business exists. So I was like, if I could create a platform where minority designers could get shine, business, and stay alive longer, then I'm down for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to, I knew I, like, no one from the Travel Channel was going to be beating down my door. So I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to do little projects where I highlight marginalized fashion communities, what they do, and how the clothing represents the culture. And then I was like, that's real cute, boo, but you still have rent to pay. So I had to monetize that. Like, how right. do I monetize that?
Right.
So I thought, well, I'll just give fashion tours. People in New York love to go on food tours. I'm basically going to do the same thing, but for clothing, because even though I live fashion, like, I love clothing, mm-hmm. but most people don't. And it's a real roadblock for them. And so to hold people's hand, take them someplace and help them discover clothing that makes them feel empowered is really, really awesome. And so that's how the Common Thread Project came together. And initially, it was supposed to be a show. Like, that was my main goal. And mm-hmm. it ended up being a tour company. And I say that because you have to learn to pivot. If you are super rigid in your dreams and how you're going to get there, you're going to mm-hmm. break and it's not going to work. And so you have to pay attention to the signs that the universe is telling you and where success is happening.
Yes.
So I had a fashion line for 4 years and no one really knew about it, but my friends and family, they could care less. The minute I started giving my tours, people were asking me to do interviews. People were inviting me to come speak. I got that job at Cornell because I know for a fact because of my tour company, because I had showed proof that I could come up with something ingenious and actually make it happen.
I have to ask you a question though.
Yeah.
Because you know my background. We come from a very similar background.
Yeah.
How did you get to the point of your first tour? Like, you thought about it. What did you
yeah.
like, you weren't just standing in the street, okay, you guys want to follow me, I'm gonna give a
yeah.
tour. How did that come about?
Yeah, so you have
it's
to
unfathomable to so, me for some reason.
Yeah, it's crazy, but I guess it's like any other business. Like, I spent a whole year of research and development where I basically okay. researched other tour companies and what they were doing, how food tours were doing it.
Okay.
I watched a lot of Anthony Bourdain and other travel shows and saw the things that they highlighted and what really resonated with their audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a year of, it was literally a year of picking the name, picking the colors, picking the logo, deciding what my website was going to look like. I just emailed everybody I knew in New York and was like, hey, do you want to shop in Harlem? Because I'll take you around and I'll do it for free.
Okay.
And so for the first 6 months, I did wow. tours with friends and family for free, just like figuring out what that looked like. But we were
wow.
talking earlier about being ready to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I was coming up with this idea. Airbnb was deciding that they wanted to start doing experiences, that they wanted to step outside of housing and they wanted to really monopolize your whole travel experience.
Wow.
So some of it is like luck and readiness. So like, it had been 10 years of me struggling, trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I decide 3 years ago, I want to be a fashion anthropologist. I decide I want to give tours. And then I'm at a Halloween party and this girl, there's a surfer guy from Queens. And he's just like, you know what you do is so weird. You should do an experience for Airbnb. And I was like, what are you talking about? She was like, yeah, Airbnb is like offering tours. You should apply. And I applied and I was in their first cohort of experiences in New York.
Wow.
So it's like opportunity, synergy, but being ready. Because literally I submitted my application and they all thought it was a really good idea. And I remember going to an orientation. They liked my look. They liked my energy. And they emailed me at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And they were like, hey, we have some execs from Airbnb coming in from California tomorrow. Can you give a tour at 1 p.m. tomorrow? Less than 24 hours. And I was like, absolutely, yes. I had no idea what I was going to say. I had no idea where I was going to take them. And I was like, it's okay. We're going to make it work. And was that tour great? Yeah. And was that tour great? No. My tours today are much better because I've been doing it for 3 years. But like, it wasn't a great tour, but it was good enough. And they could see my passion and commitment. That half the speaking gigs I get now is because Airbnb believes in me and like will pitch me to the press. And so it's just about being ready, but also being willing to pivot. Like for so long, I just wanted to have my own line. I imagined my studio, I was going to be so fabulous, all the beautiful clothing. And I had to be real with myself and like, what's really making the wheels turn? And that's me being a fashion anthropologist and that's me offering these tours. And so like, that's where I invest my time. Will I have a line again? Probably. But right now I'm going to focus on where I'm making money, where I'm getting the most exposure, where I'm disrupting and creating inroads in an industry that never really considered this. So I think you have to always be really, really flexible. If you, the first step is having no plan B. It's about never giving yourself another option because I'm 40. I'm single because I've dedicated 10 years to my company and I'm okay with that. I don't have kids yet. I hope to one day. But there's a lot of things I gave up in order to do this because I had no plan B. There was never a, we're going to do this for another year. And if we're still broke, we're going to take that job. We're going to go corporate. We're going to make the six figures. It was always, we're going to keep doing this until this works. And if it means that I'm 60 and I'm still in my studio apartment, I'm going to keep doing it. So the first step is having no plan B. And the second thing is staying ready, which means I'm always reading up and prepping my craft. Always strategizing on where I'm going to move forward. Even if it doesn't happen, I always have a roadmap of what the next five steps are so I never get bored. Like, I'm never just sitting here like, what am I going to do now? These tours in New York are going real cute. What am I going to do next? I already have a plan of like where I'll be in 5 years. And then being willing to pivot and pay attention to the signs from the universe. When I started the tour company, it was entirely just to make money to pay my rent. It was not something I planned to invest in. I was like, I'm going to do these tours. I'm going to pay my rent. And I'm going to end up on TV. I love the tours. I love the tours. Wow. People who take my tours from all over the world, they love my tours. We have so much fun together. If I had been super rigid about the TV show, the fashion line, I might have missed on the tour industry doesn't really have anything in fashion this way. Like right now in New York, if you want to do a fashion tour, it's usually something very expensive in Soho. It's showrooms. It's very pretentious. My tours 100% give you the culture of the area. It 100% is telling you the history, how the history shows up in the clothing, how the politics shows up in the clothing. And because I do it in marginalized communities, those stories are really, really rich and something that I'm very, very passionate about. So being like finding spaces and where you can step in and fulfill in ways that no one else has before and being willing to pivot and do that and always stay ready. And not having a plan B, all those things work.
So I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Do you do your tours strictly with Airbnb experiences or?
No, I do not. So I stay ready. So I've been with Airbnb for about 2 years now. And what I've done is I've spun those off to offer corporate tours. So starting this summer, I have a lot of corporations taking my tours at a diversity and inclusion activity because we all know diversity and inclusion is an issue within most corporations. So it's about like identifying how what you're really good at lends itself really well to what the world needs. And so, yeah, I do a lot of private tours. And now because so many articles are being written, people will contact me directly. I don't give that 20% to Airbnb. And Airbnb knows and they don't care. Like, they support me. Like, they want me to thrive. So I've been able to, like, Airbnb has, like, validated me, put me out into the world. But I'm using that to build a tour company that ultimately will be my own on my own platform all over the world, making money entirely just for me. It's a stepping stool, and I'm very strategic about that. Airbnb knows that, and they're okay with it because I give them 100%. I do really well on my tours that I give for them. I always get good reviews. People are happy with my tours. So because I'm giving them 100%, they don't mind that I'm giving myself 100% on the side. So, yeah, I'm really growing it. And I have two tours in Harlem. One is Shop Harlem with the Fashion Anthropologist, which you can find on Airbnb. And I also have a Black Hair tour. because in many ways, you asked what it means about being a fashion activist is I very much can care about the community that I'm part of. I love being a Black woman. I love being a Black person. I even love doing all those things in the US where it's not always cute. Mm-hmm. And so I'm all about supporting my community. And so by giving a Black tour in Harlem, it's still fashion, but I'm talking about real issues and real things around hair. And then next week, I'm actually going to Atlanta to launch my tours in Atlanta. And by the end of the year, I'll be offering tours in LA. So like I said, I'm always like five steps ahead. Like, what's next? I'll never be complacent.
That is
amazing. I'll never be complacent.
Are you going to do the tours yourself? Because I know when I come to New York, I
want
Kayla doing my tour.
I got you. But yeah, this is kind of the next frontier for me. So like, I'm finally hiring people and like getting like staff, and I've never really had that. And I'll be honest, it's incredibly intimidating because this is my baby. Like, this is almost like, it's a 3-year-old baby, but it's also a 10-year-old baby because I've been in this game, like trying to really make it work for so long. And my next step for me is learning how to A, be a good manager, and B, delegate and relinquish control. Three things that I know I'm not necessarily good at, but I also know in order to get that penthouse high rise, I have to learn how to do, right? So I think, you know, there's been so many incidents of fear that I've experienced since the very beginning of my career that even though I'm really afraid of this next frontier, because I've made it through all those other frontiers, I know I can do it. Am I still scared shitless? 100%. However, because I've proven to myself that I can be afraid and still get the job done, I'm just going to push forward. And it's okay if I mess up the first time, as long as I'm committed to going back in and doing it better. That's the most important thing.
That's awesome. A lot of people needed to hear that. Because it sounds
it's okay to fail.
It's okay to fail. It is so okay to fail. And everyone has to define for themselves what failure means to them. Right? Just as long as you don't give up. And then it's not even failure. It's a lesson learned.
It's growth. Because you'll never go back to where you were before the failure. You can only advance. You can't go back.
Absolutely. Mikayla, this has been amazing.
Oh, thank you. I loved it too.
You're so inspirational. I've gotten good nuggets from you, believe it.
Not believe it.
Very motivational to me. You said quite a few things that, you know, I'm definitely going to put into practice. You know, you're amazing. The Common Thread Project, when I saw that, you know, starting up, I was like, this is interesting.
Right.
And I started seeing it more and more, and then seeing the press that you've been getting on it. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Awesome job. I'm so proud of you. Expanding.
And if I could say one more thing, like, it feels so good. Like, for all those people who are in the middle of like, nothing's happening. It's really scary because you wonder, like, one day when you make it, will it feel good? And I'm trying to, like, it feels amazing. And there was many, many times I did not think I would make it this far, but it feels good. So if you're in the middle and you're stuck, please keep going, because when you get on the other side, it's amazing. It's superseded any expectation I ever had for my life. And I still haven't even fully made it yet. So I can only imagine what that feels like. Tell you, it feels really good. Yeah, it feels really good. So if you're listening, like, please do not give up. If you have the luxury of continuing to fight the good fight, please do. Because when you come out the other side, I've never been happier. I've never felt more fulfilled. I can't even tell you how much I love my life. I can't tell you. Like, I really, really love it.
That's amazing. You rock.
Thank you.
You rock. You so rock. And I look forward to being your neighbor one day.
Yes, exactly. And I look forward to showing you Harlem or Atlanta or LA or Chicago or Uzbekistan or wherever you want to go with my tour.
Anywhere. We're going to start with Harlem.
Yeah, I would love.
Such rich history.
It's amazing. It's really amazing. And, you know, we're experiencing a lot of gentrification. And in Atlanta, I'm doing my tours in Little Five Points, which is also experiencing gentrification. And I realized that, like, I am now like a champion of like keeping the culture in the face of gentrification. And so I want to show everybody Harlem, because there's so much Black history on my tour, because even if people are moving there just because it's cheap, I'm gonna make sure they know how dope these neighborhoods are, how dope right. these people are, how rich this history is. Like, you can move right. here because it's cheap, but you ain't gonna leave time with me without knowing how dope Harlem is.
Right.
So yeah, I would love for anybody, if you're coming to Harlem, please check it out, because Harlem is just amazing. The face of Harlem is changing, so I would love for you to see it while it still is kind of the Black Mecca of Manhattan, because it's really amazing.
Yes, definitely, definitely, definitely. Well, Michaela, thank you so much for joining. How can we find and follow you?
Great. So I have a website, which is www.tctproject, the common thread, so tctproject.com. Or you can follow me on Instagram at TCT Project. I welcome you into my community, and I hope that one day I'm able to give anyone who's listening a tour. It would be my honor.
Absolutely. Michaela, thank you again for joining. I can't even say enough. This was amazing. This was amazing. And I cannot wait to see you. We will link up when I am in New York.
Yes.
I do want to take the tour, and hopefully I'll have one of the little people with me, not so little anymore.
Awesome. I would love that.
With me. And so, you know, for them to experience it as well, because they don't know New York like how we know New York, right?
They have
no idea about Harlem. You know, they have no idea. Things that they've probably heard that may not be true. So getting in there and walking around and seeing the different sites and what's the history behind that building, or what's the history behind this or that, you know, it's amazing.
Yes.
Amazing. Yes. So yes. Definitely.
And you get all that on my tour. You absolutely get all of that on my tour.
And the thing about it as well is that you're a PhD. So you know what you're talking about, and you know how to put it
together. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And if my dad hadn't made me get a PhD, it probably would be harder to get this idea off the ground. So daddy knows. Yes.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Michaela. I really appreciate you. So everyone, please follow on Instagram. Michaela, say your handle again.
At TCT Project. T as in Tom, C as in Charlie, T as in Tom Project. Yep.
Absolutely. And your website is?
The same, www.tctproject.com.
Thank you so much, guys. This has been Michaela Brown, PhD, fashion anthropologist, fashion educator, fashion activist, fashion entrepreneur, and fashion enthusiast. And for me, all around badass. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you again, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Bench Talk. Be sure to catch up on previous episodes at benchtalk.net. This is Jackie Mitchell, your career consultant. Be sure to follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Jackie Mitchell CC. And on Twitter, Jackie Mitch, that's Jackie, MITCH CC. Thank you, guys.